You are listening to The Tenants on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. To support us, visit patreon.com/ Kyle Dempster Studios. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of The Tenants. My name is Kyle, and I'm joined by my co-host, Stark Realm. Hello, Stark. How you doing today?
Pretty good. Hey.
Good to hear. We got a thing that we've been talking about for a while, battle mechanics. We've been hinting that we were going to do this, and we've been putting it off in favor of getting into some more true nitty-gritty skill point discussions, things that I think actually came together much better overall. You know, we covered races and classes, we covered your gear options and weapons, and then went into how you actually deal with skill points, whether it be guilds or your class skills. So now that you know how to make a character, you know what gear to look for, and you know how to spend some of those initial skill points, now we're going to talk about what you do when you get up against monsters. It's about time, I feel. It's probably something we should do.
Yeah.
People out there have probably already been fighting them, so you might have an idea of what types of combat there are. We're going to cover the ideas of light and heavy attacks. Then we're going to get into blocking, knocking your enemies off balance, bashing, and finally dodge rolling. And then if we get some time towards the end of this episode, we are going to talk about how to manage some of that inventory that you're going to get from looting everything and completing dungeons, etc. There's a lot of this game is banking space. Do you remember, what does Ninja 614 call ESO, Stark? Do you remember?
Oh, I know that he's obsessed with inventory management is the true end game.
And, he has a name for it, too, and I can't think of it.
Inventory management online, maybe?
ESO. Oh, well, I can't remember it. Ninja, help us!
It's fashion scrolls, right?
It really is, isn't it? So let's kick this thing off first with how we actually get into combat, the difference between light and heavy attacks. So as you guys might know, do you want me to cover light and
yeah,
you can
go
do
ahead.
Heavy? Okay. I'm yeah, always making you be the talking man. So when you're first going up against an enemy, you're going to be doing probably your light attack, which is just a simple left click. This is useful for basic DPS and weaving, which is something we'll get into at a later point. It's something you're going to be working on when you are very familiar with the game, and it's going to up your DPS a good bit. But light attacks, simple left click, you can kind of spam those guys, do a lot. That's your most basic attack in the game. If you're playing on a computer or PC, that's just going to be left click, like we said. And that, the opposite of light attacks, are heavy, which are by holding the left click down. You've probably done this in passing, one way or the other. This has the advantage, these heavy attacks have the advantage of returning magicka or stamina, depending on the weapon. Also, the heavy attacks will auto-fire when they're finished. And what that means is if you're holding down left click, it is going to complete on its own. So let's say you've got a big old great sword in your hand or something. You're holding down your left click button. Your guy's going to do a swing. He's going to do a big charge up, I should say. And then he's going to swing. And that's your heavy attack. If you're using a staff, it is going to look like, I think if you're using like an Inferno fire staff, your guy's going to be holding a charge for a second. And then he's going to release a big fireball at the end of it. As compared to just doing a simple left click light attack, which is going to just spam a little tiny fireball. Anything else staves, you want to add with that, Stark? Sorry.
Well, I was going to say, the staves actually have two different heavy attacks, depending on the type.
True.
So frost and fire staves will actually do what you're describing, where you'll hold it back and you'll charge and won't release a single blast. Restoration staves and lightning staves will both create a beam to the target. In the case of the lightning, it'll just zap them continually.
Yes.
And in the case of a resto staff, it will create a beam of energy that deals magic damage to them. And so it's a little different in those two cases. Again, the same idea, and you just keep holding it because it will eventually complete. The important thing with heavy attacks, though, is this is something you really end up doing when you've depleted your resources, whether that's stamina or magicka. So it's really important if you're running out of resources in a fight because you're using your abilities a lot to have this option to fall back on.
And honestly, the difference in the staves, like you were saying, is the reason I like Resto and Lightning better. Sometimes people throughout the game, you too, Stark, may have noticed that, like, sometimes the hitbox of the enemy seems a little funny, and your spells won't necessarily execute, or your abilities are, like, off by a bit, even though it looks like you're targeting. So I really like Lightning better, because it's very clear with that arc you mentioned. It's very clear if I'm actually doing a heavy attack on the target versus is my guy just derping there, like, not really charging his Inferno staff. That's why I've opted out of those for almost the entire time in the game. It's for me a lot of personal preference, but I don't know.
Yeah, you do need to keep your reticle on the target you actually want to hit with it. In some situations, that can be a little tricky because the place can get frenetic. But
are you saying I can't even aim my cursor?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Well, everyone, I'm out. Goodbye. Have a good rest of your day. Stark will be taking over from here. I'm going to learn how to point my cursor.
One thing that can help with that, though, and it's a little finicky, but there is actually a tab targeting system that'll aim assist in these situations. It's not 100%. If you're not looking at the enemy at all, it won't target them. But if you're basically in the right place, it'll guide most of your attacks where you want them.
I have never tried that once, even though we've had conversations about it both here and I've seen people ask on Twitch. I need to get in there. It's something I just don't think of. You know, it's like I'm so used to not having it in this game that I don't know. I just need to play with it so I know how to talk about
it. Yeah, because this isn't a game that's primarily built around you create a tab target and then you just keep tabbing the numbers.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like you do actually have a target lock. It can be really useful in PvP because it prevents people from getting away. But it helps in PvE if you're having a hard time actually connecting attacks, especially against highly mobile enemies, that you can just lock onto them. And so long as you've got it in roughly the right place, it'll follow through.
I bet part of my problem is I don't have my... I don't think I have tab on my... I use one of those game pads. I don't think I have it there. That's probably why I've not thought of it. Sorry.
That might be it, yeah. No, that's okay. I'm not entirely sure on the limitations of the system because I don't use it in PvE very much. And in PvP, it tends to be, I use it to keep track of somebody and keep damage on them. Also, it's the amusing thing where it's like, especially for PvP, if somebody's behind a wall, you'll still have a targeting outline for them while they're not visible.
Wow.
So you know exactly where they're going if you've locked onto them.
I had no idea. See, that's why I need to do that.
It's really nice.
Well, I have my homework, basically, in the first 5 minutes of the show. I also wanted to say or ask, and I don't know if you're going to know this off the top of your head, but I can speak to Resto staves that when you're doing heavy attacks, for example, you actually spend some passive points to increase the amount of magicka return. So do you know, does every weapon have something like that? I don't remember that from like dual wielding daggers.
Yes and no. Most weapons don't. They don't actually have a thing that does this. Heavy armor does.
Oh.
So heavy armor will return your resources on a heavy attack. And one of the champion points, which we'll get into someday, increases your resource return from heavy attacks. So there are ways you can increase your resource return from other weapons. You just don't do it with the actual weapon skill line. It applies to everything. And I believe it applies even more with the Resto Stave, but I've spent so little time with those things.
That makes sense. I just remember, I think it's like the third or fourth passive down, you can do that. Mm-hmm. It's always a good one to do. Because if you're, you know, using Resto and you're a healer, obviously, then you're going to need that magicka because someone's standing in the poop. Ooh, which we're going to talk about that soon. let's switch over here to talk. So we you know, those are two very simple concepts. Light attack, heavy attack. You've probably already done it if you're listening to this show. As long as you've been in the game, you've probably executed a little bit of both of those. But blocking. This is something that, when you know it, it's becomes easier to do. Like, what I want to say, not every game has blocking in it. That's kind of a mechanic that took me a minute to get used to in ESO. Coming from World of Warcraft, I didn't have to do any blocking for my character. So the idea that you can hold down, again, PC here, but hold down the right click on your mouse, your character is going to block. And he's going to get this interesting little animation there. It's like little squiggly line sort of things that look like a shield. I don't know what it's supposed to be, but I like it. And
I think it's supposed to be the glass shield, the glass motif.
Oh, well, everybody click it and let us know what you think on that one. Right. Hold down right click. That's interesting. I didn't equate those two.
I have no idea why it's the glass shield, but that's what it looks like. So
yeah, the first time I did it, see, this is why I wanted to, why we want to go back to basics on some of this stuff is, I think when I very first started the game, I didn't even really understand what it was. You know, you get in there, you just start clicking around, like, what kind of looks like a shield? Got a, is this a magic shield? Is it a, you know, I didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in the tutorial, it actually forces you to do it. So it's like, because like everything we're explaining right now does get explained in the tutorial, but because the tutorial locks up your controls and forces you to do it, it's very easy to do it and then immediately forget that you were doing it.
That's my biggest issue with tutorials in video games across the board. ESOs was not overwhelming to me, but a lot of video games when they're like, okay, this is our 300-step program. Now you're just going to look over here, look over here. And like you said, you move on so fast to the next one that it's easy to forget.
Well, ESO front loads a lot of mechanics because there is a lot here in the combat system. So, you know, they've got a lot of stuff to cover and they've got a very limited amount of time to do it in. I think they've done a fantastic job with the Somerset tutorial, but it's a lot of material very quickly, and you can certainly be forgiven for missing stuff or just not realizing what's going on in some cases.
And I'll be the first one to say that, yeah, as soon as I got out of the tutorial and got in the field, you know, when you're actually free, that's when I'm like, okay, I really hope I know how to do this thing. So what does blocking actually do? Stark, do you want to tell us about that?
It mitigates and...
Uh-oh, I lost you there for a sec. What was that?
I said it mitigates incoming damage.
Aha.
So if you go to block and an attack hits you, it will cut the amount of damage you'd receive by roughly half. I think the exact mitigation by default is 50%, but I'm not sure. So you reduce damage you're taken from with your armor, and then whatever's left over gets reduced again by half by blocking. In some cases, this is enough to turn an attack against you from lethal to safe, or even trivial damage. In some cases, it's going to be so much damage that you will simply die either way, unless you are incredibly tanky. So some of this is just you'll learn over time based on what you're fighting, whether to worry about it or not. A lot of the stuff you're going to be dealing with in Overland content and in the main content generally won't do that to you unless you're specifically running group content. But most of this actually comes in trials and dungeons, so end game, where you start dealing with stuff that will simply straight up kill you if you try to get in the way and screw up.
Makes sense.
But the big thing here is, yes, it will mitigate incoming damage, and also if the enemy is charging a heavy attack, so specifically a heavy attack, and not simply charging a spell, when they connect with you, they will be staggered, they will be knocked off balance, they will be momentarily stunned, and at that point we're going to go into the off-balance system, which we'll come back to in a minute because there's another related thing that can happen. Also important to notice that if you see that shield on an enemy, do not heavy attack them.
What? Stark, why?
Because you operate in the exact same rules they do. So if you heavy attack someone that's blocking, you will be knocked off balance and stunned.
How many
and they can exploit you.
I don't want to think about it, actually.
Yeah, I've had it happen to me a few times. The AI tends to be less brutal about exploiting it, but yeah, you'll be taking more damage regardless. You can actually break free from that, by the way, when you're knocked off balance. So on PC, it's both mouse buttons at the same time. I think it's both triggers on the console controllers, but I'm not 100% certain of that. What this will do is it's a specific action your character can perform. It costs stamina, and it will free you from crowd control, specifically stuns and other disabling effects, including being knocked off balance.
Kind of like shaking them out of it almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can use that to survive from this happening to you most of the time. Also, if you're in PvP and you knock somebody off balance, you really do want to exploit quickly because they can break free.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the crux there. The other related situation can put somebody off balance and will stun them. Similar thing is if they're charging an ability. So at first glance, this can be similar, but a little tricky to distinguish. With time, you'll start to realize, and I believe the color indicators you'll see on the enemy are different depending on which it is. So for example, if somebody's charging an AoE blast effect at you, In that case, you, instead of just blocking, you bash, which is while you're blocking, you then press the light attack button again, mm-hmm. and that'll knock them with your weapon. There's different animations for each weapon type. And what this will do is it will set them off balance. It will interrupt them, so the ability won't be fired. And at that point, you can still heavy attack to knock them down and do significant damage. But it's a little bit different, because if you just block it, you'll take the hit.
So talking about bashing for a second, where you're interrupting their spell cast, for example, do you need to be right next to that target to do that, Stark? Are you, as a caster, able to do it from distance? What are people looking at? Limitations there?
Yes and no. So there are a couple of ways you can interrupt somebody at range. I don't believe these will set off balance, but they will interrupt an ability like that. But those are active abilities. Uh-huh. So the Destruction Staff has one, I believe it's Shocking Clench, or one of the morphs. And the bow has one as one of the morphs for Poison Arrow. Again, I think it's Injection. It's funny, because with the morphs, I don't tend to keep track of the names. So on the, don't keep track of the names I don't use. So with Poison Arrow, I'm used to the one I use, and then it's, what's the other one? Don't remember.
I mean, honestly, we can expect a lot out of Stark, but not, I think we'll give you a pass in that you don't need to know the name of every single morph in the entire game.
But yeah,
next week.
So the short yes. So the short version of this, though, is there are ways to do this at range, but there's not a mechanical way to do this at range. So if you're at range and you see somebody charging an attack like that, and nobody's close, nobody can bash them out of it, you need to get out of the way, if possible.
Because I feel like that wasn't something that, like, I was genuinely asking both for the audience and myself, because I tend, as a magic, a DPS person, again, not running like super trial content, I tend to be usually fairly close to the boss. So like, I'm still typically in bashing range many times, just because it doesn't matter a lot of the time. You know, you're not going to wipe because you're close. But so therefore, I've been able to bash at close range if it's been convenient. But then at the same time, I don't remember ever being told, like, no, you must be within like a certain amount of space. Your character actually kind of has to connect with them to make it happen. So that's something I want to clarify.
Yeah, there's actually a range on that. I could be wrong, but I think it's 5 meters.
That actually was randomly what I had in my mind.
Yeah, you need to be pretty close. You do need to be in range close enough that you can hit them with a light attack from a melee weapon.
And so if you're out there rolling, I'm literally just going to use like a sorcerer or something. You got your staff on, you're out there killing things in the field, and you see some monster charge up and attack. If you're up close to it, feel free to bash it and try that out. I'm sure that's probably not recommended towards very endgamey stuff. Is that true, Stark?
Yeah. And not stand next to the boss. As you progress through the endgame, through the group combat, you're going to see a slight progression as you go, where it's like, okay, now it's not screwing around nearly as much. And then, now it's just going to straight up kill. Actually, a sort of fun little bit of history. When the game was rebalanced originally to remove the leveled content so that everything scales to you, there was a lot of stuff scattered through the overland that would just straight up murder you. Because when it was scaled to end game, like when it was all scaled to 160, suddenly a lot of this stuff would hit really hard and would just straight up murder you. Because it had been balanced around the idea that these powers are set up, I guess, on the back end so that they can be set to any level for any content type. But now suddenly they're locked at end game. And so that was rebalanced, I think, within a couple of months of that going live.
Yeah. And so for those who don't know, what Stark's talking about is that when the game first launched, zones were different levels. We kind of talked about this last week with like the thieving loot tables when you're doing Ledgerman stuff. But the whole game was different. Different zones were different levels, and when they rebalanced, yeah, I could see that being a big thing. Ouch. Yeah. You really get smacked around like that. And I was going to say, we kind of talked about this before, too, that the game does allow you a lot of training wheels now. And so I was going to say, when you're trying these attacks, you might, when you're trying light and heavy attacks, when you're trying to bash things, you might not always have a great target in the overworld, you know, just when you're out in the field questing. Some of that stuff might melt in front of your face. Like, you might go up there and just execute a few attacks, and you don't even get a chance to try some of these skills. So, I don't know. What would your recommendation? Do you have a quick recommendation, Stark, of how someone might, if they want to start implementing some of these attacks right away, like practicing bashing, for example? Would you say go up against dungeon bosses? What do you think?
You can actually test bashing in the open world. That's a lot easier, ironically, than light and heavy practice, because you can't really practice a rotation, an end game DPS rotation in Overland. Stuff will melt too fast. But when it comes to, you can fight something with just some light attacks, keep an eye on what the enemy is actually doing, what their animations are, what attacks they're preparing to use, because you can actually manage the bashing and blocking there, because they will use all of the abilities you deal with.
Good point. And they're probably not going to like very seriously wound you. You know, if you're just fighting one person, you can kind of toy with them and let them go through their cycle of skills, you know, let them try and hurt you. You can really just play like a defensive position for a little bit and just see and start reacting to it. Cause again, as you get further into the game, things are going to get tougher. So you want to learn these basics now and be used to that. So I think so. So we know that bashing now, we know that if you're doing something that's ranged, you are relying on skills to do that. Holding down right click for your shield and then light clicking to complete the bash. You can't do that as a ranged person unless you're up close. 5 meters, we think, but kind of just really close is what that means. However, if you are melee DPS or a tank, that's within your realm of possibilities. You can totally interrupt what they're doing.
Yep.
So we kind of talked for a second about off balance. We want to loop back around to that one.
Yeah. Okay. So off balance, it can be set a few ways. I want to say some of the lightning ground attacks also.
Yes.
They set off balance. I think it's blockade, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's elemental blockade. Okay. Yep.
So what this does is it will stun. The enemy will have these sort of swirly, sort of little wisps around their head. Mm-hmm. They'll sort of sway a little bit. And at that point, if you heavy attack them, they're going down and they take bonus damage on the way down. And that's actually also going to keep them out of combat for a little bit longer. I used to know the exact flags that were being set and cleared with this, but basically they're non-combat for the duration. This won't work on enemies that have full CC immunity. So you're not going to be knocking down dungeon bosses with this.
Right.
At least not now. Used to be you could. That was a little bit different.
Huh. I hear that's primarily the reason they want you to run a lightning staff a lot of the time is as a healer, back bar it, because of the off-balance effect.
Yeah, and that's actually the thing. The off-balance, the stun effect is lost. The knockdown is lost. But the extra damage is still there against bosses.
Oh, okay. So you can't knock them down or stun them, but the extra damage, you said.
Yeah, you still do extra damage to them. So, yeah, there's a reason to set things off balance. There's also a few abilities. The whip ability for the Dragon Knights comes to mind that will deal additional damage to enemies that are set off balance.
That's a great point. I do remember that. That was something... And that's why they have a complementary skill, I believe, that they throw something or something like that. I think when you're starting it out, that's kind of a combo.
Yeah, you're thinking of Obsidian Fist? That's actually a knockdown.
Does that count?
No, it's a knockdown. So that'll put them in the prone state, and heavy attacking on an off-balance target will put them in the prone state. So in both cases, you're getting into the same state, but you're doing it in different ways. That's actually part of a much larger discussion about how you tank in the game, because being able to control where people are or where enemies are is a lot more important in this than in something like WoW, because there are no AoEs. So you need to lock down enemies. But like I said, that's more about tanking and less about knocked off balance, because that's primarily going to be something the DPS are going to worry about.
Interesting. Okay. I'm glad you drew that separation there, because I didn't know that there was a separation between those two necessarily. Okay. So if the enemy, this is like literally in our show notes here, if there is an enemy NPC winding up a heavy attack and it'll show his white lines, you can block the attack and this will cause the enemy to become off balance and susceptible to knockdown from your own heavy attack. So I see, you can make them off balance and then susceptible to a knockdown if you choose to use a heavy attack. Can be a lot for people to take in. So enemies winding up a heavy attack, you see some white lines, they do it. I'm trying to think, you can really see this a lot in, I'm trying to think entry level here, like Wayrest Sewers has a boss that loves to, he almost does nothing, I think. He's that one in the water pit thing. And he does nothing but like charge up a heavy attack. So if you're starting out and you're running some dungeons, you might know which guy I'm thinking of. But that's a good guy to like practice getting out of the way of heavy attacks on.
Actually, another thing about that is that that's one of the ones you'll see almost always in overland mobs. It's really easy to spot, too, when you're looking at normal mobs, because they'll use, usually when they're using the same weapons you are, like they're using a greatsword, or they're using dual wield, or they're using a sword and board, they'll actually go through the motions that are very familiar if you've handled those weapons in game, because they'll play the same animation when they draw back to use a heavy attack.
Ah, yeah, you're right. That's very common, huh? That and the arrow spray thing, that mm-hmm. conal attack.
Yeah, and the arrow spray can be bashed and interrupted, because that's actually acid spray, and I forget what the other morph of it are actually bow powers. So in a lot of cases, when you're dealing with overland mobs, they'll be using powers you can find in the game and use. And this can give you information for what you're dealing with. So that arrow spray thing, that one is actually one that can be bashed out of. I don't remember. This may be just a weird gaffe, but I don't remember seeing enemies actually use the bow heavy attack very often. They'll use bow powers instead, and those can be bashed.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I've never taken notice of them using a bow heavy, just like you're saying. I've seen a lot of their skilled-based attacks, but yeah. So there's two ways to practice, right? On pretty much usually they come paired together. You usually get like someone with a bow and then someone with a great sword in the same mob that you might, same pole. And those are some great ways to practice that. So if you see someone charging up a heavy attack, you can block it, which is going to put them off balance. And if you want to try, you can also incorporate a heavy attack, which would then knock them down, make them susceptible.
Yeah. A similar thing actually with the magic users, now that I'm thinking about it, because the staves, most of the time when you're dealing with a humanoid opponent that's using a stave in game, like an NPC, mm-hmm. they'll use interruptible abilities. So they'll have a thing where they've got the ice wall that comes towards you, or you know, the sort of ice ball that comes towards you that we don't have access to, or they'll use an ability like the fireball comes towards you. And in those cases, like those can actually be bashed out.
I want an ice ball.
Yeah, that's not available to us for some reason.
Okay, well, I'll remember that for later. I'll file that away. that's basically off balancing in a nutshell and interrupting. Mm-hmm. And then now how do we get out of the way if we cannot interrupt something, Stark? This is a little bit of a hot, I don't want to say hot button issue, but it's a, you taught me something before the stream in regards to dodge rolling. Is it a good way to get out of the red circle?
Not reliably.
And when we say red circle, I believe that's the default color in the game.
Yeah, default is red.
So those, anytime you see, you go ahead. Take it.
Yeah, so basically with a lot of things in the game that will put down an area, like any AoE attack, area of effect attack, will give you some warning where you do not want to stand when this attack lands. Again, early on in the game, this won't be much of a problem because you can just stand in the stupid and you're fine. It'll come down, no worries. It'll do a little bit of damage, but you don't have to worry about it as much. Later on, especially once you start getting into vet content, this stuff will kill you straight up. It will deal more damage than you can sustain and done. In some cases, immediately, and in a few cases, it's impossible to avoid dying to it. So, yeah,
yikes.
Be warned. Sometimes you can safely dodge roll out of these, especially with ground-placed ones, but generally speaking, it's not a good idea. If you can get out of it on foot, just running, even if you have to sprint for a few seconds, that's going to be safer than dodge rolling, because there's some weird quirks with how the game handles dodge rolling and with how dodging as a system works in relation to dealing with avoiding damage from attacks. So usually with dodge rolling, what you actually want to do is you want to dodge specific single target attacks by dodge rolling rather than trying to avoid AoE with it. That said, sometimes it is the fastest way to get someplace, but the actual animation doesn't reliably update your position until after the animation is finished. So there's a number of situations I'm thinking of, especially late game, where dodge rolling can just straight up kill you.
Which is, I'm really glad you brought this up, because I feel, and maybe I just internalized this myself, you know, maybe I saw dodge roll and thought, oh, clearly that's what we're supposed to do. Or maybe I was told this misinformation, because, you know, that's kind of what we do here, is we debunk a lot of things, like advice that's given that's not always correct. I feel like I was told to dodge roll more. Get out of the red, dodge roll. And that's why I'm probably thinking that's true, because I re-hotkeyed dodge rolling, and I'm sure it was because of someone telling me to get out of the red with it.
Yeah.
But if you're waiting until you're completing the actual roll animation, and you have high latency or high ping, that could be...
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Death sentence.
So what I'm describing may be the result of ping issues. And it's really hard to know in the moment. So it's entirely possible that it's supposed to work the way it's supposed to work, where you dodge roll and you're moved with it during this duration. But because of ping, the game doesn't quite update in time. And there are a few situations in the game, a few specific instances, like veteran scale Color Peak, where the time it takes to dodge roll out will be too long and you'll die.
Huh.
So it's possible that under normal circumstances, it's just fine to dodge roll out. But it's also possible we're talking about situations where the damage wouldn't have been severe enough to worry about it. The other thing dodge rolling does is if you've been rooted.
Yes.
So if you've been rooted in place or you've been snared so your movement speed is reduced, you can dodge roll and the dodge roll distance doesn't change. You can still break out of it and move. And for being completely immobilized, this is the way to get out in the immediate moment. The break free animation. So if you were stunned, you'd use break free. But if you're rooted and you can't move, then this will free you from that. And as with break free, dodge rolling costs stamina. It also has an increasing stamina cost if you do it in quick succession.
Oh, really?
Actually, this was a thing we were testing when we were looking at when you were wondering if would actually restore resources.
Oh, right.
You know, because with the Nightblade with the resource restore effect.
Yeah.
So what I actually did to clear my stamina was repeatedly dodge rolling, and it only took a few. And this is even on a medium armor character to completely drain my stamina out. So, yeah, you don't want to keep dodge rolling constantly. It will cost stamina each time. It'll also cost a lot more to dodge roll if your character is not in medium armor. They get a cost discount. So, it can be useful.
So, yeah, now I'm thinking, there's clearly an advantage here to not dodge rolling. I mean, if the idea is that it's okay to just run out of the red, like that's the preferred method, I mean, then you are saving stamina, in which case, if you get rooted in, you know, the next 10 seconds, 30 seconds, you actually have your stamina to get out of that, which changes the game for me a little bit, because again, I feel like I was told to do that to get out of it.
The one thing you do need to remember to roll dodge for, especially if, and this isn't really something you're dealing with yet, but on stamina characters, when you're dealing with heavy attacks from enemies that will kill you, if they connect with that, that's when you really want your roll dodge. That's when you need it, because that will set a state where you can't be hit by that attack while you're rolling away.
Oh.
So these AoEs where it's like, oh yeah, get out of the red. The get out of the red is very good advice. And in some situations, the fastest way out is actually just going to be to roll dodge. But it's the single target attacks that can be dodged reliably.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where you actually get into a situation where it's like, okay, I'm going to roll dodge now. Because you're not trying to dodge a whole spray of arrows coming at you. You're trying to dodge one attack from one sword.
So, question with all of this that we've learned. If you can't get out of the red... Is blocking an effective method to mitigating some of that damage?
Yeah, but it depends on the red, and it depends on how close you are to the edge.
Good point.
Also, if you have a healer, if you've got a really good healer, and the damage coming from the red is not something that will eat through shield, will actually burn through shields, or bypass shields entirely, it's possible that a good healer can actually keep you alive through the red. I've had a few specific cases where one-shot mechanics have been salvaged by a healer shielding up the stam DPS that got out of place. So it depends.
Okay. That's a good one to know. Cause I remember struggling against some boss when I was very new, and someone was like, yeah, if you're really not going to make it to the edge of that red, just hold down block. And that, and I feel like there's some actual boss mechanics, one of them that you kind of had to do that for. So, I don't know. These are some very basic
There's tactics. Two things. Blocking prevents you from regenerating stamina while you're blocking.
Oh.
So, and when you're taking damage from any source while blocking, that actually gets applied to your stamina pool. So you have to pay stamina to block an attack, and then you can't regenerate stamina while blocking. It also slows your movement. This is reduced if you're using Sword and Board and have all the passives, because they've got one that will actually increase their movement speed while blocking. But in general, it will slow you down. So if you couldn't get out of the red in time, blocking may be enough to save you, to let you sort of shamble out while still holding it off. But if you're doing this while your stamina's low, you're probably not going to survive. Also, if you're doing this while you're in the middle and you just can't get anywhere near the edge, unless the healer can pick up the slack, it's not going to cut it.
Okay. That's some good advice there. Anything else you need? Think people need to know about some of these mechanics, Stark? I think we did a pretty good, pretty solid rundown of them.
I think the important thing here is actually just practice movement. And get into content where you're actually seeing the area of effect attacks, where you're seeing attacks from enemies. Even if the damage isn't severe, just getting practice in, seeing what this works like, seeing what this feels like, will help when you're dealing with the stuff at a higher level. It's more dangerous.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Practice, 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 because I think that's where I've seen some people kind of suffer in combat. You know, when I'm streaming out here, ooh, my character's so, he keeps dying so much. And I don't, you know, I'm not there to see it, but I feel like it might be some of the time that people are either not dodging things properly, or they're just not handling the mob in an effective way. Yeah, there's something to be said about a boss just absolutely decimating you if it's way more powerful. But it might just come down to practice of your footing in the game, making sure you're getting out of the way, making sure you're countering things when it needs to be countered. I think that's a lot of it. And it's a very different thing in ESO than other MMOs. I know that WoW isn't big on this sort of stuff. You can interrupt some spells, but even that's not a necessary thing. So practice, practice, practice. I like it. Now, yes. Stark, now that we've talked about taking down enemies, what are we going to do with all that loot that we get from them? Because that is a major component of the game.
We got two choices. And this actually depends a little bit on whether you've got ESO Plus or not.
Oh, yeah, because ESO Plus,
If you have ESO Plus, so you get the craft bag, and you can just squirrel away all your resources, all the materials you get, it's probably a good idea to start deconning and deconstructing gear as you're getting it if you don't need it. Okay, this will start advancing your crafting skill lines and start putting you in a better shape to make better gear for yourself to fill in gaps of things you just can't find.
Okay, so ESO Plus gives us the unlimited crafting bag. So that means that all the crafting mats we pick up, whether it's that we're farming jute off the ground or chopping up some mahogany wood or something like that, that's all going into our crafting bag. Food as well, meaning not consumable food, but like if you pick up flour or pork or something like that, that's going into your unlimited crafting bag.
Right.
And then deconning, or deconstructing gear, so we're actually going up to the crafting tables in a city, and we are going to the, is it called deconstruction tab? I don't even know.
Yeah, it's deconstruction, I believe.
And is that the one with the arrows that are like crossed over one another, or is that research?
Yeah, splitting apart from one another, yeah.
Yeah. So taking that and then actually breaking that stuff down. We'll do a whole episode on, probably a whole episode on crafting at some point. But Stark's right. Great way to learn stuff. Great way to also break it down into its original material. So then you're getting that.
Also a good idea to do research or start early on. It's a system that at the beginning is pretty fast, but over a longer period of time, it takes progressively longer. So without spending real money and without scavenging around and trying to find accelerators, it'll take roughly 6 months. No, sorry. 3 months to finish the fastest two skill lines to research.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it's like when you're looking at it initially, it's like, oh, hey, it's going to take 6 hours to finish researching this. That's nothing. It's fine. When you're working on trying to get your 100th trait in a given skill line, it's like, oh, okay, this, I should have done this a little while back. I know how you feel about that, but it's like, yeah, probably should do that.
Well, we'll do a whole episode on crafting. I mean, I'm a fan of it. I just, I know that we have some people that come into Twitch and they're just like, I don't like crafting. Can I play this game? Yes.
Yeah.
There you go. There's your answer, everyone. There's some community members that are very I don't know if they themselves are stern on crafting, but some of the people that follow them can be pretty stern on it. And I never, you know, this, again, good time to take it just a second to reiterate that ESO is a game that you can pick up components, and as long as you're having fun with it and you're not ruining someone else's day, then you're not doing it wrong. You know, if you really hate crafting and that's your make or break about this game, do I have to do crafting? I absolutely hate it, Kyle. No, you don't. You can go out and kill other stuff and just enjoy yourself. But yeah,
It's worth noting that basically everything that comes out of crafting, everything that comes out of crafting can be traded. Some stuff that goes into the system can't be traded. So there's a few recipes, and there's actually, I think it's just a few recipes that cannot be traded to other players. But if you can produce that item, there's no restriction on who you can give that to or sell that to. So if you don't want to get into crafting, you can still get access to all of the stuff there. It's just going to be less convenient.
I think that there's an exception to that in terms of furniture crafting, but that's a story for a different
time. No, you're thinking of the achievement furnishing.
I'm thinking Sigic book crafting.
Those are actually achievement related.
Oh, you're right. They are. But they're, well, I guess that's,
yeah,
a,
it's
that's
a weird,
blending
it's
of both
a weird
worlds,
thing.
Huh?
Yeah, because those are actually, they're tied. Yeah, because buying those recipes is tied to achievements. So for reference, when you join the Sigic Order and you progress through the skill line, you get access to Sigic furniture recipes that you can buy. They're fairly cheap, actually. Mm-hmm. And these are built around the idea of they're for Sigic Order member. And if you want these, you have to be a Sigic Order member and a crafter. And this is, like you said, it's one of the only times when you can actually make something that you can't trade.
Right.
In almost every other circumstance, if you can make something as a crafter, you can trade it. The difference is with furnishings, there's already a precedence because there's a lot of furnishings that are tied to achievements already, and those can't be traded.
Yeah.
So that's a special little case. It's also, they're entirely cosmetic.
They are. You're right. It is cosmetic. But this is the reason why when we're talking about managing your inventory, you will want to, we're wrapping this back around here, you'll want to be deconstructing because if, you know, let's say your goal, your end game is housing. You know, which doesn't seem to be completely related to maybe crafting at first glance. A lot of the items for your house are going to be crafted. So to clean out your inventory, you'll want to be breaking things down because when you break down those crappy swords you're picking up from enemies, that is giving your character, I think we talked about this before, but inspiration. You're gaining crafting inspiration. Specifically, you're breaking down swords, you're getting blacksmithing inspiration. Inspiration, after you level up some blacksmithing, you're going to be using that to craft things like, I think there's a lot of like goblets and things like that thing, cups and stuff. So it's kind of all this big happy circle of life approach. You get the gear, you break down the gear, you learn how to craft, you craft some housing items. Ta-da! Or you make yourself some gear, period, in this story. Take their gear, make your gear.
That said, when you're getting into housing, it is entirely possible and viable to buy your housing materials from other people. Like, to actually get the furnishings you want.
Yeah.
The exception are the Sigic ones that we just mentioned and the achievement furnishing. Everything else you can actually buy from other players. So if you've got somebody that's crafting gear or crafting furnishings you want and they're willing to sell it to you, they can sell it to you. They're not prevented from doing it.
Yep. And as you've said, same with armor, too. You know, a lot of the time, if you need some gear for a new character, you can always, and you got money, you can buy the gear from other people that can make it for you. A very valid option.
Yeah. Even in some cases, getting into end game, some of the crafted gear sets can be pretty viable just for starting out at end game or filling out a build.
I just did that the other day as I got my warden to 50. So he got a set of stuff from some people in our guild, which is very helpful.
This is all assuming you've got ESO
Plus.
If you're not a subscriber, then it does change things a little bit, because when you're deconning things, you're going to end up with a lot of items that will go into the craft bag, especially when you're deconning a lot of them, because you'll get a mix of an upgrade material, the style stone used for it, the trait stone used for the item, and then some of the materials used to produce it in the first place. Now, you're not going to get all of these off a single deconstruction, but you'll get a selection of two or three of these. And when you're deconning 10 or 15 items, this can actually end up with a situation where you're ending up with more materials in your inventory after you decon than you did before. So you can clog your inventory through deconstruction. In this case, again, if you're playing without a subscription, it's actually better simply to vendor them. Turn it into gold.
Wow, that's an interesting one. Okay. Huh. So you're suggesting, so sell the item as a whole instead of breaking it all down if you do not have ESO Plus.
If you don't have ESO Plus, you're not committed to the idea of inventory management to deal with crafting. That's the other thing. If you don't have ESO Plus, but you really want to be a crafter and you're willing to say, I'm going to set aside all of this inventory space, You can do it. But it's more inconvenient. You're going to be having to go through and you're going to have to decide, well, I don't need this anymore because it's lower level material. So I'm going to get rid of this, either sell it to other players or just vendor it to get rid of it. But Wow. Yeah, generally speaking, everybody still advises. And I think this is still where we led with. You construct everything, you get the XP from it. Mm-hmm. If you're in a situation where you are not, like you don't have the option of simply squirreling the stuff away into an infinite bag, then you might actually simply want to vendor stuff. Because you can use that gold to expand your inventory. You can use that gold to replace stuff you don't have. It's less time efficient, but it is still a viable approach. You'll take some flack from some people because it's not the normal advice, because usually, like, and this is including me, like, this hurts me when I'm saying this, just vendor it. Like, no, you could get so much inspiration, you know, so much crafting XP, you could get all these materials, but it's like you will end up spending more time fiddling around with the crafting materials and fiddling around with this stuff in and out of your bank than you will get from that.
It is true. I think we were talking about this on stream very recently. I like to show it off every time someone asks, is ESO Plus worth it? And I'll show them my crafting bag. And only after 3 months of play. You know, I've not been here nearly as long as you, Stark. But I click my mouse. I got one of those mice that can do the fast scroll thing. And I'll flip it into that mode. And I'll just whooshoo and scroll down this massive list of crafting supplies in my crafting bag. And it is probably like six times the size of my standard inventory already. It's maddening.
Yeah. Well, you've made it when you can no longer pull out all of the alkahest in your inventory from your craft bag into a character's maxed inventory. Like, it's no longer possible because there's simply too many stacks of the stuff.
Wow.
And that's when you know you've made it, because that stuff drops off everything.
Oh, see, yeah. You know, when you're just loaded to the brim, and there are people, man, there are people that'll be like, oh, don't worry about these crafting materials. I'm like, are you sure? Are you sure I can't help you out with that? I'll pay for it. They're like, I got stacks. I got stacks on stacks on stacks.
Yeah.
Which kind of goes around. I mean, we're kind of beating around the bush on this a little bit. You know, there's not so much beating around the bush, but there's so many different aspects of inventory management. I mean, there's your crafting supplies. There's your plain old items. You know, that's actually the food that your character eats. That's the potions. It's the things you're going to get from your daily login rewards. I mean, you're getting level up bonuses. You know, whenever you're leveling up, they're going to give you some things here and there, from mimic stones to scrolls to whatever. Your inventory is under more assault than you are in this game. It's the real victim of ESO. And so managing it's a little bit hard, and you have some options. So first of all, ESO Plus, I consider it a must. I'm kind of shilling for ESO, but I genuinely believe in it. But I mean, it's worth its money in terms of many different things. But ESO Plus also grants you extra space. So your bank, for example, is doubled. So max capacity in your bank, and this is, you can actually purchase bank upgrades within the game, and these are shared across all of your characters. These are account-wide bank upgrades, and it's purchased with gold. So you can go in and you can spend money and you can buy bank space increases. But I'm seeing here in our notes, we got a max capacity of 240 spaces if you don't have ESO Plus, but that doubles up to 480 if you have ESO Plus. I also see that you can not only buy it with gold, but you can also buy those bank upgrades with crowns.
Okay, so this is actually a thing, and this applies in three different systems. Please. With inventory. Basically, whenever you're trying to increase the size of your inventory, you can get there through gold, or you can get there through crowns. Normally, I would recommend gold. You're not spending real money for this. You don't need to. But this is one of these things that really varies depending on your personal finances. If you're looking at the prices and saying, yeah, no, that's fine, I could throw that at it, then don't let us tell you don't, but you don't have to. Don't feel you need to. In the case of each of these, in the case of the bank upgrades and in the case of your inventory, your actual bag upgrades, when you're buying it with gold, the amount of gold will increase on the higher tiers. I have it marked down there. To buy all 18 inventory upgrades for your bank will cost about 750,000 gold total.
Yeah.
Which sounds kind of crazy. By the time you're end game, by the time you're doing a lot of end game content, or just even running around and clearing quests in end game and getting those quest turn-ins and just getting gold from other sources beyond that, that's not unreasonable, but it is a commitment.
I feel that it is one thing that you can kind of take it as you need it too. We're not saying
it's not asking you to spend 750 at once.
Right.
I think the highest cost is like 65K for the last 10-20 inventory slots.
That's not bad.
So it scales up over time. We are talking about buying 18 progressive upgrades.
And again, these are account wide, so it's not like, ooh, I'm so you only have to do this once for your account.
Yeah, exactly. I did this. I actually had to look up the numbers this time because I did this, I think, 2 years ago, and I'm like, well, what were the numbers now? I don't remember. I've leveled several characters to cap since then, and I just don't remember. In the case of your backpack, it's a similar system, but in this case, it is character bound.
Correct.
So you need to find a character. You need to find a bag merchant. These are located pretty much anywhere you find a lot of merchants for other services. And again, it gets progressively more expensive. I want to say the total is about 200K to upgrade from a starter character all the way to the limit with this system, but which is about 140 inventory slots total. Mm-hmm. But I'm not 100% certain on that number either, because it's been a while since I actually kept track when I was upgrading.
That sounds about right. About 8 upgrades. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, you can buy these with crowns. You can buy them with gold in game. If you buy these things with crowns, the price never changes. It's always 1,000 crowns per upgrade. So if you're just starting out, you probably really don't want to spend crowns on this because you're only saving, 1,000, 5,000 gold. And if you're looking at that last one where it's 65K and you're saying, 10 bucks is worth more to me than, or is worth less to me than the time it'll take to earn this money, then that's your choice and that's your finances. But you do want to front load that way if you can.
And that one's so actually, and I don't know the exact cost. I don't see that here for the bank space upgrade. But if you're looking at dropping crowns on one of these, it would be my suggestion that you drop the crowns on the bank space upgrade, just because, again, account wide. So let's say you roll up your first character, you absolutely hate him, you want to delete him. If you spent crowns on their inventory, you have some real world financial investment in there. And again, like Sark said, if you're rolling through life with lots of money and you don't care, you're a separate case. Do what you want. But if you're like, ooh, how can I most effectively spend my money? I would put it towards the bank space, because like I said, if you hate your character, you delete them, you keep the account-wide bank space.
Yeah. Also, if you're ESO Plus, which at that point you probably are, you get more inventory slots total anyway.
Mm-hmm. And then also, which is kind of takes... this is something we haven't talked about before, but horsey horses. When you're upgrading your mounts, there are three different options for upgrading your mounts. One is pure speed upgrade. The other is their stamina, which is in control of how much they can run for. And then the other one is a carrying capacity. Your mounts have satchels on them, basically. Yeah. And so you can upgrade them to a total of 60 extra slots of carrying space. And that is, you get to upgrade them once a day. It costs 250 gold to upgrade. And that's a fixed price, so that never goes above 250 gold. Each day you log in, spend 250. And each day that you upgrade their carrying capacity, that is one piece of carrying capacity every day. So that will take you 60 days of login to get them up there. Now you can find riding lessons throughout the game. If you're watching Twitch and you're getting some of those Ouroboros crates, if you got your accounts linked, you're on PC, you get those crates, you might find some riding lessons within there. You can also buy riding lessons from the Crown Store. So again, you have an option. But these are character-based. So these are not account-based. Again, these are, if you hate your character, you delete your character, you lose all that progression towards your map. Just saying.
Okay. A couple of things to point out here. Yes. Actually, one minor correction. Stamina does two things. It controls how far it runs when you can activate the run, you can continue to sprint after you've depleted the stamina. It's a weird quirk of the system. So the stamina does not work the same way as your on-foot stamina. You can keep sprinting after you deplete it fully. The other thing is your stamina functions as a kind of hit points for the horse. So when your stamina is completely depleted and you're hit by an enemy attack, it will knock you off the horse and set you prone. If your horse still has stamina when you're hit, you'll lose some of that stamina, but you will remain mounted and continue to move on the horse. So that's this weird little system that has a strange quirk.
No, that's good.
From what I remember originally, the plan was that when they were going to add additional mount types, they would have different effects. So the ability to continue sprinting after you depleted the sprint meter was supposed to be something unique to horses as opposed to other mount types.
Huh.
But when the mount system was standardized, this was 3 years ago, that was apparently dropped, and that quirk was just sort of rolled over into all mounts.
Wow.
The other thing about mounts is it's really important to understand you get one for free.
Yes.
You get to level 10, you get a free mount. And this is account-wide, so all of your characters immediately have access to a mount. And what your mount looks like is entirely cosmetic. If you're seeing somebody blazing past you on some really snazzy-looking mount that they pulled out of a crate, that's not pay to win. They're limited by the same statistical systems that you are for their mount. They've just been playing the game longer or have actually spent money to upgrade the mount speed. They have the same statistics, and you can actually switch between the ones you want to use at will. And as a result, if you don't want to throw money at this, you don't have to. You get the mount, you'll get a free mount, and you can buy a few others with gold. So those systems are just going to, like, that's going to be there. You're going to have full access to this system. It's not gated. I've seen a few people who were new to the game were assuming that you had to buy horses with gold, or sorry, with crowns.
And yeah, I thought that true. At first too. I genuinely did. I was like, oh. And then I think you kind of said this, or we've both kind of said this, but I don't know if we've said it so bluntly, that this training for your mount that we just discussed, the idea that you can do stamina, speed, or inventory space, it's less like training your mount, more like training your character, because
yeah,
it doesn't matter what mount you pull out, they all have that training that you did.
Yeah, they still have that same stat base. This actually goes back to that same thing I mentioned earlier. Like, this is distant history, so it doesn't apply to the game now. Mm-hmm. Originally, each mount was separate, and you had to train up each one individually.
Wow.
And when the system, was standardized, it was a huge boon immediately. The trade-off was you could train multiple mounts the same day.
Okay.
But if you wanted to switch between something that had capacity and something that had stamina, like, those inventory slots would disappear. The other thing back then was that there was actually a level cap for the mount. You could only spend a total of 50 days training one. So it was a different time. The game was actually very different back then, especially with the mounts. And so it's been changed. Now mounts themselves are account-wide, are only cosmetic, and you can max out all three tiers instead of having to decide how you're going to spend your points.
Thank goodness they listen and take feedback on this stuff.
It's a lot more fluid, yeah.
I'm really glad I joined. I'm really glad I started playing ESO in 2018, because we are really in a golden age. That sounds awful. Glad you experienced it. Glad I didn't.
There we go.
So if you want to start on that can be everyone's homework today. Not only are you going out and you're training, you're actually training yourself against monsters, but once you're level 10, you get your first mount, you need to go find one of those, stable masters, for lack of a better word.
You can actually start training your mount from the instant you get out of the tutorial if you want.
Really? You don't even need to own a horse to do it first?
You don't need to own a horse, no.
I thought you had to own a horse, but I...
No, you don't. There's actually a warning on a character.
That's why we have
Stark here. When you get on a character... I could show you screenshots of this right now from today. When you get on a character on an account that doesn't have a mount, you will have the ability to spend the points. Like, you can increase the speed, you can increase the capacity, but you're not going to see any benefit from that, including the capacity. So, like, if you increase the capacity on a character, like, your starting character has 60 inventory slots, and you go to the stable master, you can spend 250 gold, upgrade your capacity, look at your inventory, it's still going to be 60. The instant you attach a mount to that character, like, you unlock one and then you just slot it on that character, then you see all the bonuses you paid in already.
It
really is like training your character now. You can start on that as soon as you're able and as frequently as you're able. If this is, like, if you're happy putting money towards the, like, putting gold towards this in game, because that's open to you from the beginning, even before you hit level 10. That said, this is a weird little niche thing, because if you're playing a character where you can afford to blow 250 gold a day at the very beginning, you're probably not in the situation where you're like, I want to spend it on this thing I don't have yet.
Yeah. But
if you are, like, if you actually understand what's going on and you're like, especially if you're on an alternate account, yeah, you can actually start training as soon as your character gets out of the tutorial.
Interesting. Look at the things we learn here. So we're very short on time, actually. Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
Go ahead.
One thing I did, it's in the notes and we forgot to bring this up.
Uh-oh.
With the pack merchant.
Yes.
You kind of want to wait until level 7 before you buy your first upgrade. So if you don't, your first upgrade costs about 500 gold. And this isn't the end of the world if you miss out on it. So you go there, you're like, okay, I'm going to buy this. And then later on you find out, well, I could have gotten this instead. You'll get that first upgrade for free at level 7. I've been told, but never personally verified, that if you upgrade the inventory space first, you don't get that. That this is specifically the first inventory upgrade and not like just another one tacked on.
Ooh, so it's not a potentially.
Yeah.
It is not a free upgrade, period. It is a free first upgrade.
Right. So you can get that with gold if you really don't care, or can get it for free. So you will actually get one of these for free. And again, if you're just starting out, the 400 gold's probably going to sound like a lot by the time you get to level 7. So yeah, feel free to just avail yourself of a free inventory upgrade instead of spending money on it. Beyond that, though, like, that was the one thing that we didn't actually catch on at the moment when we were going through. Also, don't spend 10 bucks for that thing, please. Because you're going to get it anyway very soon. Yeah.
We'll save this for another day too, but just a call out. Something you do want to start saving crowns for if you're doing ESO Plus, or a wise investment, maybe even over, just, you know, instead, if you're looking to burn some crowns, instead of investing them into your bank, consider saving them up for the banker and the merchant that are under the assistance tab in the crown store. You can summon a banker to your location and a merchant to your location. No cooldowns, nothing like that. You summon them to you.
These are really useful.
Yeah, you can put them in your homes. Like, they use buy them once. You can put them in every single one of your homes. Somehow they just are, you know, in every house. But they're very good, because, like, if you're midfield and you're out of inventory space, that's a great way to just deal with the item later, or just sell all your trash that you've got on you if it's the merchant. They're pretty expensive. Stark gave me the advice of waiting to a crown sale before you actually...
They're 50 each, so...
So $50 US.
Yeah. So it's a little bit pricey. They're probably one of the most useful utilities in the crown store.
Yeah. Again, not... Yeah. They're.
It's not pay to win. It's a time saver. They're very much just time savers. It's like, I'm going out, I'm doing this stuff. Okay, well, I'm just going to vendor all this trash I'm carrying around instead of running back to town to vendor all this trash I'm carrying around. They lack some functionality of the normal versions of those NPCs. True. So you can't interact with your guild bank. You can't list things for sale in the guild store. You also can't repair gear or buy anything from the merchant.
Yep.
You can only sell stuff to her.
Lazy.
But if you just need a way to dump stuff into her out of your inventory, they're there.
Well, I think that's a pretty good covering of the ground for inventory. And we can always tackle any other more detailed questions later, but the inventory system is luckily pretty cut and dry. There's some good add-ons out there that'll help you manage it as well, help you sort through things, help you auto-mark things as junk to get rid of, auto-repair. Like, you can, the world is your oyster in terms of those, and I have an add-on list that I run that has a lot of that stuff in it. But just in the essence of time... I think one last thing to call out here, Stark, in terms of news, is that last week we talked about the Summerfall event. We were able to do it. We cleared it thanks to amazing people in the community. So we talked a little bit about housing this week on this show, and you're going to get a house. So if you are someone that owns Somerset, if you purchase it between now and October 7th, the cutoff is specifically October 7th, 8 p.m. Eastern time. You need to own a copy of it, and I'd probably log in before then.
I think you need to log in, but I'm not 100% certain of that.
It just, you know, be on the safe side. Don't wait until October 7th at 7:59 p.m. to buy a copy. Just maybe a day before then, buy it, log in, say hi to your friends, do that sort of thing.
Actually, is that p.m. or a.m.? I'm
I read PM.
I thought it was AM.
I copied and pasted that directly from their site. Let me double
check, cool.
But I should have gotten it exact. Scroll.
Well, if you copied it, then it should be correct. I was just like,
doesn't mean I don't trust myself. Usually. Yes, it is triple checked.
Okay,
it is
cool.
October 7th, 8 p.m. Eastern.
So you do have the day if you want to wait that long and hold
today.
Off in the suspense. Yeah,
do it now. Get it today. Go in there and enjoy Somerset. And for that note, it is still on sale until October 2nd. So actually, if you do wait till the very last minute, you're losing money. You're just burning some cash that could be put towards those merchants.
And of course, if you already own Somerset, you're already set. Just log in, say hi. Flee for your life, but you'll get a free house anyway.
And you should get that by October 10th. Free house, free pet, free mount. So enjoy those three things, like we said, in your inventory. October 10 is the rough date. Could be a little bit early, probably not much later.
Yeah.
Well, Stark, I think that wraps up a very jam-packed episode of a lot of homework for people from updating your inventory to going out and fighting some things, dodging some red crap on the ground. Also,
play the game.
Yeah, you can change the color of your AOE markers.
You can. That can actually be really useful.
If red burns your eyeballs, or it's not burning them enough to make sure you get out of it, change them to something crazy and fluorescent. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, Stark, I'm going to call it quits here. I think that's a good one. Let's come back next week and chat about things. We are going to try and talk about the Witches Festival as that gets closer. So just keep in mind that we're going to have an episode sometime in the next, like, probably 2 weeks, that one of our topics will vary. We're just going to shift it. To be determined, next week we're going to talk about guilds and the social aspect of the game. If for some reason we get weird information about the Witches Festival sooner, we might move up seasonal events and talk to you guys about that first. But that's the game plan right now. We're going to talk about guilds, getting social in the game, hanging out with people. I'm going to pimp our guild for a second and say, if you want to join one on PC North America, we have one called Unlife. It's super friendly to new players and veteran players alike. We are, it's primarily a Twitch audience, and it's open to people that are both just in the game that find it. And obviously people in this podcast are more than welcome to apply. Best way to do that is to come over, hang out with us for like a few minutes on our stream, twitch.tv/Kyle Dempster Studios. That's in the show notes below. That's the easiest way to get an invite to the guild, just because we're always talking about it, and you say hi, and you know, we'll get you an invite right then and there. Twitter is twitter.com/Kyle Dempster Stu. Do you want to pimp out your Twitter, Stark?
Yeah, I can be found on Twitter.
Uh-oh, it cut out just as you did it.
Oh, there we go. I still be here. Am I here again?
Hello, I hear you.
Okay, good. I'm on Twitter as Michael J. Schwartz.
Yes, and we're over there tweeting back and forth from ESO all the time. So if you want to keep up on the latest things, that's a good place to do it. Stark, thank you for being here and sharing all your wonderful knowledge. I appreciate you very much.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure.
Good. Then let's maybe do this next week. Same time, same place?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, everyone, have a good week. See you next time. Bye-bye.